Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
What's the key to discovering delectable dining? Find something that sizzles, a time-tested favorite, a feast for your eyes and palate, and a dining experience handled with care. In Vicksburg, the key to the South.
It's just Texas week here on the Thunder and Lightning podcast. We did our SEC preview of Texas and our prediction on them. Your fans, Joe Cook from Inside Texas, will be very happy with me as I had the Longhorns undefeated in their first season in the SEC. I think I deserve an honorary 10-gallon hat or a free pass to the front of the line at Franklin's Barbecue. Something. Tell me, what do I deserve for that?
Oh, man, I thought we people who cover Texas and who are in the Longhorn world didn't know what we were in for. So maybe there is something to a good team being in Austin this year and contending for a title. But no, you'll be welcome. And, you know, I obviously the Horns don't play the Rebels this year, but they do play the Bulldogs in Austin. So I think if you make the trip, people will make sure to treat you well.
Yeah, I think so. So, you know, here in Starkville, we've been talking about that, and that's the first game. And, you know, that'll be an interesting trivia question, you know, down the road for people. What was the first SEC game for Texas? And it was Mississippi State. It's been 28 years since State came to Austin with Jackie Sherrill in his second year here at Mississippi State. What's changed? No, I'm just kidding. With this team, it just feels like that they are the most SEC-ready team. A&M wasn't this SEC-ready when they came in. Missouri certainly wasn't. I don't think Oklahoma is at all. Texas feels like a team that we could have plugged in last year, and they still would have had the same kind of season they did. They obviously showed that when they beat Alabama. Why is this team so far ahead of the other teams that have come into the conference?
You always hear about, you know, the grind of the SEC and what has those teams special and what makes, you know, these SEC high quality teams. And Steve Sarkisian's been asked about this a number of times. It's like, look, I'm not trying to build an SEC team. I'm trying to build a great football team. And great football teams have big athletic humans in the trenches and really, really fast guys elsewhere. And he always makes the point that it just so happens that most of those teams happen to be in the SEC. Texas was one of those teams last year. They did it in the Big 12. They lost one game in the Big 12, lost one game in the college football playoff to the eventual national runner-up. But they looked the part. They had two top 50 picks on their defensive line. They had two top 50 guys, including a first rounder at wide receiver. All their skill talent got drafted. Like, they had all the hallmarks of an SEC team. They're just playing in the Big 12. Big humans, fast people. Now they're in the SEC, and their schedule is going to look a lot more like that. They're going to see other similar teams, but they still have big humans up front. They brought back four or five offensive line starters, and the fifth was someone that started a handful of games last year. They have a third-year quarterback in Quinn Ewers, who's skilled at getting the ball to those guys all over the field. And they have some portaled in offensive skill talent at wide receiver. So a couple of them play in the SEC, Amari Nyeblack and Isaiah Bond from Alabama. So on defense, it may look a little different. They don't have those giant defensive tackles and T'Vondre Sweat and Byron Murphy like they did last year, but they should probably be a little bit better at a lot of different spots. They portaled in some quality guys on the defensive line to try and fill in for Sweat and Murphy. They portaled in a lot of experience, good players in the defensive backfield, and they're going to trust their talent and what they have at linebacker. So the team that won the Big 12 last year, that made the college football playoff, there's a lot of similarities between this year's first SEC team and last year's college football playoff team.
The one thing that stands out to me, and I use this website called Our Lads. I think people in our line of business use it a lot for depth charts. Even if they're not wholly accurate, they are at least, you know, they give you some names to work with. When you look at the Texas starting 22, there's only, you know, four guys on offense that are transfers, and one of those is Ewers, who's been there for 3 years. So, I mean, we're not really calling him a transfer at this point. Defensively, there's only four guys on there that are listed as transfers. One of them, Gavin Holmes, has been there. This is a lot of continuity. This is not a lot of new faces from a team that was 11-1 in the regular season a year ago. Is this the most continuity that you can remember from year to year at Texas?
Yeah, it tops last year. So that tells you a little bit about what Steve Sarkisian emphasizes. Continuity is not always good. Sometimes you see returning starters, and it's like, oh, they got 10 or they have 15 returning starters. Yeah, that's great. They went 4-8 last year. But they've got, for all the NFL losses they had, they still, like I said, have 4 of 5 starters returning on the offensive line. Quarterbacks coming back. 2 of the top 3 running backs are back. There's 2 of their top linebackers, their best defensive back. Like, when you're dealing with the type of seasons Texas had, there's going to be guys that you lose. And other schools know this problem well. It's a little bit new to Texas, at least in the past decade or so. But it's still a problem that others know how to fix. And the best way to do it is to get guys and keep guys who maybe were the second guy last year, or maybe, broke through the lineup late in the season, and get them ready for starting job. I think a great example of that is Malik Muhammad, a true freshman from Dallas last year, was often behind Ryan Watts, who ended up going, I think, in the 6th round to the Pittsburgh Steelers. When Watts goes down, Muhammad steps up, and over the course of the last 2 or 3 games, he performs really well. I think he even has an interception against Texas Tech late in the season. That's somebody who Texas expects to have a lot of impact this year on playing against opposing teams' top wide receivers. So that continuity is kind of seen there. There are a lot of guys who may not have had, a ton of snaps, but they had snaps, they had opportunities, made the most of them, and now they're going to be asked for more. And that just kind of goes across the board, especially as you lose guys to the NFL on a, hopefully on, if you're Texas, on a more consistent basis.
If I had one negative about Texas, and it's not a negative about Texas, it's just a negative. The schedule. I this is for an SEC team. This is a relatively easy schedule. Obviously, the game at Michigan is a tough one, but Michigan lost quite a bit. I don't expect them to be the same team that won the national title. But no Alabama, no Ole Miss, no Missouri, no Tennessee. You do have the game with Georgia, which is probably the game of the year in the conference. You miss, of the 6 teams I would say could be playoff contenders in this conference, Texas is obviously one of them. You miss 4 of them, and you have the game with Georgia. Is there gonna? I don't see a world where Texas misses the playoff, but if they miss it, that would be an absolute catastrophe, would it not?
Yeah, I think if Texas is not in the playoff, that means they probably went 8-4, and yeah,
Oof.
that's not what the Longhorns are looking for in this season. You talked a little bit about who they miss and who they get. If you look at the top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, they play 2 teams. They play number 1 Georgia, and they play number 8, at least in the SEC poll. Then they play number 9, number 11, 12, 14, and 16. So yeah, they do miss a lot of the national titles contenders, save for Georgia, and they get Georgia at home. But there is one aspect about that where, you have 3 of your 4 road games are against teams, I guess to say, and or all 4 of your trips away from DKR in SEC play are against teams ranked 8 or lower. Well, you get Oklahoma, they're number 8. That's in the Cotton Bowl, and crazy things happen there every single year. Texas A&M, number 9 in the poll. Well, Texas A&M hates Texas, and they're going to get the first chance at the Longhorns in a 100,000-seat Kyle Field. And I don't think Texas A&M is the 9th team in the conference. I think they can finish a lot better than that. Arkansas may have its problems, but Arkansas beat the heck out of Texas in 2021, and they hate Texas maybe as much as anybody. And they have to go away from DKR for all 3 of those games. So what the teams may not be as formidable as some other opponents on other schedules, but the environments, save for Vanderbilt, that Texas has to travel to this year, are definitely going to make they're going to make things a little bit more difficult than if they were playing them at home. That said, those are teams that you would think Texas can still handle their business with, especially Arkansas and Vanderbilt. We'll see what Texas A&M, end of the year rivalry game, road environment, always interesting. I think that game could have a playoff implications, just because I don't
Possible.
see a supremely difficult Aggie schedule this year in the SEC as well. But the quality of opponent that they're getting is of a different level than it was in the Big 12, but at the same time, they do, like you mentioned, have a little bit more of a manageable schedule for a year one. They just have to go to some tough places to play those games.
What is the difference in the Texas rivalry with Oklahoma and Texas A&M? What's the difference?
I think if you ask a lot of fans, they see Oklahoma as equals. And, you know, if you're looking at Texas in history and Oklahoma in history, I mean, Oklahoma has been the more successful program when you look at national championships, conference championships, and, you know, even Heisman winners. Their volume is greater. Maybe brand exposure is better for Texas, but win national championships and, you know, individual accolades, Oklahoma, I think, has the number. But that's a program Texas sees as a little bit of an equal. For the longest time, I think like 80-something years, this was the biggest rivalry game on Texas' schedule. It was a non-conference game until 1996. And then when both teams joined the Big 12, that was the first time it became a conference game. It's obviously going to continue that way in the SEC, but it used to be kind of a, for two states bordering each other, it used to be an interregional rivalry game in the middle of the year. And it was a measuring stick kind of for both the Southwest Conference and the Big Eight to see whose best was best. They saw each other kind of as peers. With A&M, you know, yeah, Aggie fans are always going to say, oh, we were founded first. Well, it was the Agricultural and Mechanical College of Texas, 1870-something. The University of Texas, which the state constitution designates to be a university of the first class, 1883. Aggie fans, you know, they've always been a little bit trying to get one over on Big Brother because that's how it is. Texas was the dominant team in the Southwest Conference. Texas A&M was always kind of in the shadow. Texas has won, I think, 70% of the games against Texas A&M. There are some blips where the Aggies had some runs, especially in the 80s and early 90s. They're blips. And Texas what became a national brand because of their successes in the 60s under Darryl Royal and 70s with Earl Campbell and, you know, 2000s with Mack Brown. Texas A&M only has blips. So at the same time, it's the in-state rivalry. It's the one where, you know, you can have a brother go to Texas and a sister go to A&M and they're meeting each other over the Thanksgiving table. So the bigger rival, without a doubt, is Oklahoma. But there are so many fans who are glad to see this rivalry back. I'm glad to see it back because I got tired of watching people just bicker over the internet, bicker over recruiting, not to denigrate other sports, but, you know, claim superiority with, you know, a baseball series win or even a non-conference basketball game win. A&M track athletes would wear their bibs upside down at Texas relays just because they had a Longhorn on it. That speaks to how petty and silly it became.
I did not know
that. That speaks to how petty and silly it became. And that's why I think, even though it is probably the second rivalry for Texas, it's one a lot of people are ready to see handled on the field instead of on the message boards.
I love that kind of petty, though. I'm not even going to lie to you for a second. That's fantastic. I didn't know that, so you taught me something today. One last question. This program this year, SEC ready, they're ready to compete for an SEC and a national championship. Are they built to do it when yours is gone and some of these guys are gone? Is the program, I know this team is the program SEC ready?
I think so. Of course, it takes recruiting and recruiting and recruiting and recruiting. And, you know, when you're looking at Texas, they've stacked up top six classes, top five classes over the past few years. They've been wildly successful in the portal. They have a backup quarterback that might be have better name recognition than the starter. so they have a lot of the stuff that is needed. But this is kind of where they have to continue to develop as a program. They can recruit all they want, but one of the things that Texas has lacked over the course of the past few years is development. And now it seems like they have that back. There were guys like Ryan Watts who were started very early at Ohio State, then didn't stick for a variety of reasons, gets to Texas, becomes an NFL draft pick. Tavondre Sweat, it took him a few years. It took him a few years to break some bad habits. Then he goes in the top 50 or top 60. Even Jordan Whittington, someone who has battled injury basically every year since his junior year of high school, finally gets it all together and gets picked in the seventh round by the Los Angeles Rams. Like, there are so many more, pieces of evidence that Texas is the developmental program for these star players, these guys who have a lot of talent, that they, it feels like they'll be able to do that with some of these talented recruiting classes they have brought in. They're going to continue to hit the portal. They're not going to primarily do the portal. They want to be built by their, you know, what their foundation is with their classes. They're going to lose guys every year. When you're dealing with high-end talent like you are now, you're going to lose those guys to the draft, because a lot of these kids' dreams, yeah, it's to play for Texas, but it's also to make tens of millions of dollars, and they're not going to forego that opportunity if it's in front of them. So the big deal is development, and I think Texas is developing better than it has than over the course of the past decade, when they were going 5-7 and 7-5 and stuff like that. They're doing a lot better job of that, to where, you know, you pair that with some of the skill position at quarterback, and there's the future looks very bright for the Longhorns.
Texas hosting Mississippi State for the first ever SEC game in Austin. Should be a fun day out there on the 40 acres. Appreciate your time. Joe Cook, InsideTexas.com. Always a pleasure to have you on the podcast, man.
Absolutely. Thank you.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.